A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 115. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Escape into Night. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon in England. Hello.
A young girl who is injured and confined to her bedroom escapes into a world of dreams, and the nature of this world of dreams is the basis and what makes things interesting in this 6-episode serial from ITV in 1972.
Yes, a strange, spooky show, Escape into Night, which, again, for British Invaders, is based on a novel. And this time the book is called Marianne Dreams by the writer Catherine Storr. And interestingly, we always like to get show suggestions for us to cover here on British Invaders. And this is a show that was actually suggested for us by Jill Arroway from the Signal podcast and also by Tony on our Facebook group, who's always got lots of useful suggestions and contributions for us. And so, Brian, quite nice to get a suggestion from two of our listeners.
Yes, absolutely. Two independent suggestions for the same thing.
And it's quite a spooky show. It's a show that I wasn't familiar with until it had been suggested to us. But I know now that it has quite a lasting impact on people who remember it. It's sort of, I think, well remembered for disturbing its young audience at the time, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And I think the television serial and the novel are both sort of well remembered by a lot of people from childhood. And that's sort of nice.
Absolutely, yes. Interesting one for us to talk about here.
Yes, for sure. So the setup is about this young girl, Marianne, who has been injured in a riding accident and is confined to her bedroom, mostly confined to her bed, for this period of several weeks, possibly months, of recovery. And during this time, because she is quite young and in school, I think she's about 12 years old, she is assigned a teacher who visits her to teach her for part of the day each day.
Yeah, that's right. Here she is recovering at home after this accident, which we see in the first episode. And as you say, a teacher coming in to sort of keep up with her education. But also we've got Marianne looking for other activities within the confines of her bedroom. And so one of the things she turns to is her sketchbook. And in her sketchbook, she draws a picture of a house. And it's a very sort of typical, I think, children's depiction of what a front of a house looks like. And shortly after doing this drawing, Marianne falls asleep. And then she seems to visit the exact same house in her dream. It does seem to be exactly the same house with this weird sort of flat front with oblong and square windows, just as a child would draw. And it's rather spooky and strange.
And in this house, she encounters a young boy called Mark. And he seems a little bit strange and not happy to see someone there at first. And we are sort of led to believe that perhaps this is not just part of a dream, but there may be a real Mark who is somehow there as well.
Yeah, another little mystery as this show unfolds in the first episode.
Now, there are a few characters in here that are interesting. Marianne was played by Vicky Chambers, and she plays this this young girl who is sort of confined to her bedroom, as we said, and is sort of frustrated with not being able to go anywhere else and do anything, and sometimes takes a bit of that frustration out with the other characters. And some of the other things, especially her drawing, becomes a bit of an outlet for some of the frustration of being cooped up like that.
That's right. And of course, then some of her frustrations will be expressed against the adults in the show. And we've got the teacher we've already mentioned, Miss Chesterfield, Marianne's home teacher, played by the actress Patricia Maynard, and a sort of I don't know, a sort of an authority figure in a way, Brian, but she also interacts with Marianne and is sort of, you know, at times more supportive.
Yes, she's actually quite sympathetic, which is interesting how that was done. Mrs. Austin is Marianne's mother, played by Sonia Graham, and she is also sympathetic but very stern, and in many ways the teacher is more sympathetic than the mother is. The teacher is quite young, so there is the sort of maternal character and the more sort of much older sister slash aunt kind of character that you get from Miss Chesterfield. So it's sort of an interesting little balance they have there.
Okay. And Marianne's father's not around. We learn, I think, that he's working away in Africa, so we never see him. And the only other adult we see is the doctor, the GP, Dr. Burton, who pops in from time to time. And then there's just one other character to round out our cast, and that's this strange boy, Mark, who, as you say, Brian, we've encountered in Marianne's dream house. And he was played by young actor Stephen Jones. And that's pretty much it for the cast, I think, Brian. There's not really many characters here.
Yes, that's right. Especially when you consider that the doctor doesn't show up very much. You have most of the scenes have only one or two actors in them. And it really pretty well all takes place either in the dream house or in the bedroom, which gives it a bit of a confined, claustrophobic sort of feel to it, which I thought actually worked quite well.
Yes, it does. I mean, it adds to the sort of strange nature of this show that we, you know, we hardly have many locations at all. We have her bedroom and we have this strange dream house, and that's pretty much it, with just this small cast of characters in this sparse production. Interesting and quite sort of strange and spooky feel to it all.
Yes, it has sort of a bit of a stage play kind of quality because of that, which is nice.
Yeah.
So as the story continues, Marianne continues to visit the strange house in her dreams quite regularly and discovers quite soon that Mark is actually unable to walk. He is there and he's sort of a little bit grumpy at first and he's sitting there, but he can't walk. And he remembers that he was able to walk, but he has sort of very little memory. So he's a bit of an unusual character because he really only knows about what's going on right then and there.
And then we've got Marianne learning from her teacher, Miss Chesterfield, that Miss Chesterfield is also visiting a boy called Mark, and that, strangely enough, this boy, Mark, has problems with his legs, which is why she's visiting him for home tuition. And can it possibly be that they're the same boy, that Miss Chesterfield is teaching both these children? And how can Mark be appearing in Marianne's dreams? And how can Mark know things about Miss Chesterfield, which Marianne then passes on? So there's a sort of like deepening mystery of what's going on.
Yes, it seems like possibly these two real children are somehow meeting each other in this dream. So you get these strange sorts of ideas there.
And then on top of that, we add another feature, which is that whenever Marianne adds something to her drawing in her sketchbook, it then appears in her dreams. And so she'll add features and shortly afterwards will fall asleep. And there they are. And that can have sort of good effects, and it can also have bad effects as well, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
He can't read or write. And twice a week I go to see a boy called Mark. He's recovering from a bad illness.
Is he in bed like me?
Yes, he's in bed all the time.
How long has he been ill?
6 months.
6 months? How does he stand it?
Well, he reads a lot.
Well, I don't think I'll ever get used to lying in bed, though I do quite like reading and drawing. But if Dr. Burton said I could get up, I would right away.
Well, I suppose Mark would.
So getting into our production notes, starting with the original novelist, Catherine Storr, she had a very interesting life. She lived from 1913 to 2001. She was actually taught music by Gustav Holst himself. Very impressive. And then went on to study English literature at Cambridge. And after that, went on to medical school and qualified as a doctor.
Yes, quite remarkable life, really. You know, music, then English literature, then medicine. We know that for 13 years, she worked as the senior medical officer in a department of psychological medicine. And that's probably where she got a lot of her interests in dreams and the psyche. But after doing that, after being a doctor for 13 years, she decided she wanted to give that up and concentrate on what had been her original ambition, which was to write and to be a novelist, and in particular to be a children's novelist. And so she began with a series of stories for younger children called Clever Polly and the Stupid Wolf, which were in part based on her own daughter Polly and on stories that she used to tell her about a strange and rather stupid fairy tale style wolf. And they were reasonably successful for younger children. And then she goes on to write for older children, Brian.
Yes, in 1958, Marianne Dreams was published. And it was her most successful novel adapted to the series we're talking about. And a couple years later, in 1960, there was a follow-up. She wrote a sequel called Marianne and Mark.
So there we are, this remarkable Renaissance woman, Catherine Storr, producing all this stuff. And as we say, this novel, Marianne Dreams. And when we meet a TV producer and TV writer that we've encountered before, Ruth Boswell, who was then working as a writer and producer with the ATV Children's Drama Department. And we've talked about her before because she produced and wrote and created Time Slip in 1971, which we covered in British Invaders episodes 27 and 28, another series that's well remembered, which we quite liked. And then she would later go on to produce The Tomorrow People, again, British Invaders 47 and 48. So quite an interesting series of productions here, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's quite a sort of roll call, isn't it? Time Slip, Escaping Tonight, and then The Tomorrow People. And here she is. She obviously likes the book. She pitches the idea of adapting it to then the head of children's drama, a chap called Alan Coleman, who'd be the producer for this show.
Boswell went on to write the six episodes that she adapted from the original novel, and Richard Bramall directed the serial. And he actually also directed Special Offer, the episode of Beasts, the Nigel Neal TV series that we discussed in British Invaders 45 and 46.
So it's interesting. We've got quite a few little British Invaders connections here. You know, people that we've encountered before and shows that we've talked about in past episodes.
That's right.
So then we've got this production, and they take the production, quite interestingly, they take it outdoors for the dream sequences, and they had to do some outside broadcast recording, which was very unusual for children's TV of the time. Back in 1972, and they actually had to build the front of the dream house, which they constructed on top of a hill called Bar Beacon in Walsall in the West Midlands, which is near the ATV studios. So lots of bits and pieces making this house and taking the shooting outdoors, as well as the confined sequences in Marianne's bedroom and so on.
That was a bit of a strange decision, I think, to do outside broadcast for this, because it does tend to be so confined with everything taking place in the bedroom or in the house. And they had sets for those, of course, but I believe what it was the area just outside the house when they are looking outside from the house, or when you see Marianne standing outside the house at the beginning. They used outside broadcast for that, and it's sort of an unusual decision. I would have expected them for this type of show to do that in the studio.
Right. Maybe they felt that, you know, they had to escape the confines of the two sets, the bedroom and the house. Maybe that's why they did it. And of course, as you say, some of the bits and pieces that happen outside the front of the house will become increasingly important as the story goes on. So who knows? So we've also then got to mention the music. We have, for the theme at the start, we have a section of Ralph Vaughan Williams's Symphony No. 6 in E minor, quite a spooky segment of music over some sort of again, eerie-looking images of the moon. So right from the start, we get this strange feeling of nighttime and dreams and something weird going on. And then at the end credits, again, very disturbing and spooky. We have the end credits consist of a child's voice humming while the cast members are depicted as children's drawings in a sketchbook. A very effective combination of sound and image, I thought, Brian, for the outro.
Yes, it's a very creepy and memorable, unusual sort of thing where they take the idea of the drawings, which are so central to this, And they combine that with this sort of very simple music, which was very interesting. The opening music was also good. I like Vaughan Williams very much, so it was very nice there. But the thing that was sort of more memorable and unusual was that simple little closing sequence.
Yes, we've not seen anything quite like it before. It's, you know, I talk lots about the introductions, the credits at the start of various British Invaders shows. But this must be one of the best ones I've seen for the sort of, you know, the end credits. It's a very clever idea, very simple, and yet very powerful. Quite, you know, quite disturbing.
Absolutely. They also used a lot of sort of creepy noises and strange voices and things in the dream sequences that are also fairly unusual with some sort of simple, you know, analog audio processing being used and that sort of thing. And it really is quite creepy. I think those types of things worked very well in it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the noises and the strange bits in the dream sequences, they are like dreams, they are like nightmares, and it's very effectively done. Very, very creepy.
And that's part of what they did. They really separated the real life portion of it, if you like, in the bedroom. Has a very different look to it and a very different sort of lighting and so on than you have in the dream sequences. Now, it was filmed in color and broadcast on children's TV in April and May of 1972. Now, at this point, the only recordings that exist are in black and white. So we have been watching a black and white copy of what was originally a color broadcast.
Which, as we'll talk about in the next episode, probably contributes to the atmosphere that this show has created over the years.
Yes, maybe. It would be interesting to know if the color palette was used to emphasize the difference between the dream world and the real life world. You can't tell. It's quite possible that that's the case. But, you know, we don't know that from looking at the black and white version. Although just with lighting and these other kinds of things, there is a real difference in how those two settings were shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because Ruth Boswell's other show, Time Slip, again, it only survives in black and white apart from one episode, which is in color.
And it was only a couple of years earlier. It was a similar time as well.
Yeah. And the color palette there was... Well, it was perhaps sort of strange and futuristic and garish. Now, I'm sure they would have done something different for this strange dream world set story.
Yes, absolutely. It would have been interesting to see, but it's great to be able to see what we can look at.
Absolutely.
Keep it away from us. Their eyes open, it'll help them see in.
Mark, I'm scared.
Yes, be quiet.
Nothing here makes sense. I wish something nice would happen.
Oh, I know. You know what?
I'd give you a radio.
Great, turn it on. It'll drown our voices.
I put it on the mantelpiece. It should be over there.
Come on, then.
Oh, here it is. It's not like mine. A bit old-fashioned in front.
Hurry up and turn it on.
We're coming, we're coming.
So, in our next episode, we're going to talk more about the story and about this strange dream world that Marianne appears to have created, and perhaps go on to discuss a little bit about why this show has had such a lasting impact on those who remember it.
And we will also talk about the original novel, and about a film adaptation, and we may even talk about one or two other adaptations of this very interesting source material.
Okay, plus we get to our reviews, discussions of the availability, and finally our recommendations, all stuff to come when you join us in our second episode.
Yes, we definitely have lots more to talk about with this one. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England saying goodbye.